the right number is there's no rule. The right number is that the control room sees how much energy each battery has, and some sort of algorithmic dispatch can then work out how long it could dispatch it for.
So no rule is what we're aiming for.
No rule. Yeah. Like, the fact is there have been a lot of these rules and things which actually, on the surface, you don't even realize are there, that have been probably blocking how certain technologies can be used in the balancing mechanism.
Hello and welcome back to Transmission. Today, Quentin is in the studio with Modo Energy's GB market lead, Wendell Hawtop. The conversation takes a deep dive into the workings of the GB market over the last couple of months. As always, if you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And with that, let's jump in.
Hello, Wendell.
Hi, Q.
And hello, listeners. This week, we've got something a bit different. We're going to talk about what on earth's been going on in battery storage. And we've had a rough few months in revenue terms, to say the least. Yeah. Would you agree?
Definitely.
And so we're going to have a go at explaining what's happened. We're going to ask some difficult questions. Well, I'm going to ask you a lot of difficult questions, Wendell. All right, I guess we should start at the index, right? So we're going to let's talk about pounds per megawatt, or actually let's set some parameters or some guardrails for this conversation about how we're going to talk about numbers and batteries and all that. What is the index and how are we going to do this conversation?
Yeah, so the index is essentially what Modo tracks. It's the average revenue batteries earn in different markets. So we kind of track that by sort of half hour, but usually you look at it on a monthly basis. And we put those numbers in a pound per megawatt per year basis. So you can compare month to month, year to year, just with one single figure.
Okay, so when we talk about, yes, when we talk about numbers, we're going to be grossing up to yearly and annual. And all of that's a little bit naughty sometimes because you lose some fidelity in the numbers. But the industry thinks about things in pounds per megawatt per year. And so we're going to stick to that parlance.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, what's been going on with the index? Well, this winter, so November to February, that has averaged £27,000 per megawatt per year. And that's across frequency response, wholesale trading, and also revenues from the balancing mechanism.
Does that include capacity market?
That doesn't include the capacity market. On average, the capacity market is worth an extra £13,000 per megawatt per year.
Okay.
But that is like pretty dependent on what contract you were lucky or unlucky enough to get.
Okay, so the last 6 months or so, if you've got a capacity market contract, you're looking at around £40,000 a megawatt per year. But there's some big variance in there between the best performing assets and the worst performing assets, right? So it's not, this is on average, but is that number good or bad?
I mean, it's all relative, but I think we can say it's bad. Mm-hmm. So if you compare to kind of historical numbers, so for all the 2023, batteries earned on average £57,000 per megawatt per year, so excluding capacity market. But back in 2022, that number was 153,000. And the last time we saw anything this low would be back in like 2020, 2019.
And the background to this is there's been a ton of batteries built. I mean, how many gigawatts do we have right now? What
3.9 gigawatts.
Okay.
Now operational.
Okay. For an electricity system that has peak demand of less than 40 gigawatts now, we should talk about peak demand later, but yeah, less than 40 gigawatts. And we've got about 4-ish online right now of batteries for 1 and 2 hour systems. And then we're going to put another few gigawatts of batteries on the system in the next 18 months. What does that look like?
We would expect to see at least another 2 gigawatts online this year. But like that could be 3 gigawatts if everything comes online, kind of based on the timelines they expect. But then every year beyond that, it just goes up and up and up. Mm-hmm. If you look at sort of, you know, who's got capacity market contracts, what's been announced in the press, you know, by 2027, we could see over 10 gigawatts operational.
And folks building battery assets in general, I'm going to really oversimplify here, but in general, the business case is or was some frequency response for the first couple of years, and then saturation hits. And then essentially you're building based on a belief or a business case that depends on volatility, price volatility in power markets and wholesale markets. But you're making a bet, essentially, that there's going to be lots of renewables coming on the system, lots of intermittency, lots of old thermal plant retiring, all of these big macro things, which we'll talk about in a minute, but most of them are still true, right?
Yeah.
But what has happened is we've crossed the bit between mostly frequency response and mostly frequency response to mostly other things, right? So what's going on with frequency response?
So frequency response, essentially, it's no longer the primary revenue driver for batteries in Great Britain. So I think anytime, even before November, the majority of revenues batteries earn on average was from the frequency response markets. And that's even since we said saturation had happened sort of at the back end of 2022. So if you kind of look at, well, if you look at kind of our index, if you look at kind of the proportion of revenues from frequency response, it's basically 90% plus of revenues as far back as time goes for batteries. As of November onwards, it's down to maybe 10%, even as low as like 5% at some points this winter.
So there are periods where, just to get this right, for our index, which is the average earnings for batteries, there are periods where frequency response is only 10% of the total revenue stack for batteries.
Yeah.
That is such a big change.
Yeah, and I think there's been kind of two things. So I mean, we've talked about saturation a lot. It's been well like kind of forecast, and we knew it was coming, but no one really, I guess, knew what the end would look like. And I think we now know what the end looks like, which is that batteries would essentially take frequency response contracts for almost nothing.
Mm. Well, just a comment here. I mean, I've got to come clean. I didn't expect some of these frequency response prices to go as low as they have. I actually thought, even with saturation, so yeah, we'll just talk about saturation for a second, which is there's now more megawatts of batteries than there are megawatts of contracts in these markets. So you now have a proper supply and demand curve, and the market is now pricing in what the market really believes these services are worth. There's been some peculiar things that have happened with the frequency response market, with negative pricing and the way people register and getting paid for stuff and willing to take like such low price on some products. I got to say, I didn't expect it going this low in frequency response markets.
No, like I think, like if you just looked at the fundamentals of it, which is that in a saturated market, you would expect, so essentially the people operating batteries to bid in at roughly what they think they could earn in other markets. And the number generally got to is maybe like, okay, £5 per megawatt per hour, maybe even drop it to like £4. But what we've seen this winter is like sort of systems taking contracts for like, say, £1.
You're doing a lot of work for that £1 per megawatt per hour. Yeah. Like, this is the thing, right?
Yeah, you're still delivering exactly the same service. Like you've still got exactly the same kind of requirements to do the metering, respond within sort of, yeah, like under half a second. So everything's still exactly the same. It's just you're getting paid a fraction of what you once were.
And the reason for this is there just hasn't been the volatility in the wholesale market. It's all about opportunity cost, right? If you're doing frequency response instead of something else or alongside something else. And yeah, this winter, there just wasn't anything like the volatility we expected. Can you just talk about that for a second, Wendell?
So the easiest way to look at it is to look at the spread that you'd earn in a given day if you were to just buy at the lowest price in the day-ahead market and sell at the highest price. Doesn't kind of like perfectly represent what batteries earn, but it's a pretty good proxy for it. So this winter, that spread has been, I think, between kind of £60 and £70 per megawatt hour on average.
Well, can we just talk, before we talk about this winter, yeah. Generally in winters, you expect the spread to increase because you expect, it's higher prices, not lower prices. So you expect at times where there's massive demand on the system and it's cold and all of that, you expect spreads to come from really, really peaky prices at times. And that's why you have peaking plant, and that's why you have, you know, lots of odd things tend to happen around winter, and you have triads and all this stuff. But just to make this clear, this is about the spreads come in winter from the high prices, not necessarily the low prices.
Yeah, precisely. In general, prices on average are higher. So prices on average this winter were higher than sort of they will be as we go into the kind of spring and summer. But the spread between the low and the high was just pretty like historically low. So if we compare to previous three winters, it's about a third, I think, on average, in terms of just that volatility you're getting in the market. And so you're just earning a lot less from the wholesale market. And that is just because we haven't had those high peak prices. So I think the highest price we saw winter was £250 per megawatt hour. So December 2022, the highest number was £2,500. Mm. And you know, if you just had one of those periods this winter, you'd probably be thinking, okay, that's quite a good sign. But, you know, it shows that maybe the last few winters we have had that volatility. It kind of raises questions about what has changed.
So the lack of high prices this winter, even for small and short periods, which is where everybody really earns their crust in the winter and all of that, It affects batteries, but we've got to talk about the rest of the system as well, because the lack of high prices has a big impact on other units. I mean, if you're a gas generator, say you're a CCGT or you're a peaking plant, it's been a tough period as well.
Yeah. So the very reason we haven't had those high prices, because essentially the times when peaking plant have actually been running and therefore like setting the price in the wholesale market has been just a fraction of the time. You know, those plants would have been doing very, very well back in like 2022, when we saw kind of like massive gas price volatility and wholesale price volatility. But this winter, if you're a gas peaker, you may have been running only kind of like 1% of the time, maybe like 5% of the time. And so, yeah, I think it's not just batteries that are being affected by this kind of wholesale market conditions. If you're sort of a traditional generator, it's definitely going to be hitting as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got peaking plant, you're expecting to get a couple of thousand run hours a year, and you're getting 10% of that. That's tricky as well. I guess the point I'm making is anybody really making money in this market? And actually, I think there are some, right? So if you have access to subsidies, well, let's just talk about that for a second. Is wind making money in this market?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a wind farm and you have your CFD, you have your renewable obligation subsidy, you're sort of making what you were a year ago. I mean, there's nothing's really changed for you because you've got that essentially fix.
You're just being topped up by the subsidy.
Yeah. Similarly, if some big generators were smart enough to sort of forward sell their power maybe a year ago when the forward curves of electricity were so much higher, they're probably also done quite well this winter. But anyone who has sort of, I guess, yeah, had not been subsidized, who hasn't sort of contracted forward revenues, I think would have been hit pretty hard.
That's because if you hedged last summer, I guess the curves, if you looked at the curves, everybody expected it to be more peaky than it was, and then the reality was a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I think on that, I mean, a big part of what's happened is essentially recovery from sort of like the gas price crisis we had has probably been so much quicker than what anyone thought would happen. You know, we paid for that kind of, I think, in 2022, but we're seeing now gas prices fall considerably and carbon prices too. So carbon prices are now kind of at the lowest level for, I think, about 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, looking at gas inventories, so how much gas there is in storage going into winter last year was phenomenal. And considering it's only sort of a couple of years ago that the whole of Europe was reliant on Russian gas, and we've just in 18 months or so switched from Russian gas to being part of the great American shale gas miracle. It's absolutely bananas that so quickly we switched from, you know, pipeline gas to LNG, and the whole of Europe is okay with that. And it's all ended up being, you know, from a consumer point of view and being worried about, you know, governments having to subsidize gas, you know, residential gas and businesses and all that, it's all just sort of worked out all right. A couple of years ago, there were, you know, European governments were really worried about having £10,000 bills for normal people, and that hasn't happened. So there's some good side of it, which is that really we managed to get out of jail free, really switching to LNG as a society. What that has meant, though, is that for a system where a lot of the baseload power is set by gas and carbon, baseload power prices have been really low.
Yeah, and I mean, I think consumers have seen that. Like, I think so. Yeah, as of the 1st of April, sort of like, yeah, the consumer price cap has come down like considerably. So we are now seeing that like filter through the market entirely. But I think the interesting thing, even though gas prices have fallen, carbon prices have fallen, if we look back, say, 3 years ago, before that kind of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, gas prices were lower, carbon prices were lower, but we still had more wholesale price volatility. And I think that goes to that, well, you mentioned it earlier, sort of what is peak demand? Have we got too much generation on the system right now?
So yeah, this is one of the things, another thing to come clean about, I didn't expect. And if you'd have spoke to me 2 or 3 years ago, I never would have expected that peak demand, the triad period, would have been less than 40 gigs, really. I thought it's going to keep on increasing. And what has happened is we've lost 3 or 4 gigawatts of peak demand in the last couple of years. And where's it gone? I mean, is it deindustrialization? Is it factories switching off from COVID and not coming back? Is it energy efficiency? I don't know. But what it means is those periods where the system is tight, i.e. demand is high and there's not that much generation and you expect those peaky prices, it's just fallen away.
Yeah. Yeah, so to put some numbers on that, so the average peak demand this winter was 37 gigawatts. It's the same as last winter, but that is like a kind of almost a 10% fall from just a few years back. And you know, a big part of that has to be a response to the kind of the record high electricity prices we had back in 2022. I guess fundamentally, like, is that demand coming back? But another big part of it is actually, improved energy efficiency and just more and more renewables on the system, which is essentially kind of behind the transmission meter. So yeah, you've got kind of more onshore wind, you've got more solar, and you've got more kind of demands, like people flexing their demand as well. Like we've seen this winter, the demand flexibility scheme, I think get up to 500 megawatts of response at times as well.
But still, we should do the work on this. 37 gigawatts of peak demand. So if you can compare that to ERCOT, for example, in Texas, ERCOT's around the 80 something gigawatts, I can't remember the exact numbers, but they're adding, I think, 4 gigawatts year on year, peak demand. And yes, it's hot, and yes, that comes in summer period, but they're just adding a lot of industry in Texas. Texas is, just adding lots of demand. So lots of manufacturing, lots of demand. It's just growth. It's a growth story. I wonder whether, I really want to know how much of this 37 gigawatts from 40, how much of that difference comes from good stuff like saving energy and behind the meter generation, or whether it really is, is it a canary in the coal mine for an economy that actually is going the wrong way with industry and manufacturing? I actually wonder whether peak demand peak power demand in a world that's electrifying, peak demand is a pretty good proxy for GDP growth. But yeah, we should do the work on that, see whether that's coming from good stuff or bad stuff. But I just never imagined 37 gigawatts would be the peak in 2023, 2024.
So, I mean, if you measure that up against what we've got in this country for generation, we've got sort of 27 gigawatts of combined cycle gas turbine generation. How, like 5 gigawatts of nuke capacity? It changes. But then we've also got 9 gigawatts of interconnected capacity now. So we had the kind of 1.4 gigawatt Viking Link with Denmark come online this winter. And
we've got to talk about interconnectors.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, of that 9.2 gigawatts, we've got sort of 1 gigawatt of interconnection with Ireland. And generally, Ireland is similar to us, but actually higher price. So most of the time, we're exporting to Ireland. But every other sort of market that we're interconnected with has a generally lower price than the UK, especially so France, which has had kind of all this nuclear capacity come back online this winter. So that's kind of any time we've remotely had a high price here, we're just importing maybe like 4 gigawatts from France. We've got Norway with all of its sort of hydro. Yeah, which Denmark with all of its wind. Essentially, interconnectors currently are definitely suppressing peak prices here in the UK.
We've got to come back to the index though, because there are a couple of assets that are, it's not all doom and gloom. There's some assets that are actually doing pretty well. Whilst the average is low, there are some, particularly 2-hour assets, which are doing well. Pilswood, for example, a couple of others that have done well in the last couple of months. And then with the capacity market contract, the best performing assets can see revenues around the sort of £65,000-£70,000 mark, which with higher interest rates and cost of capital, that's in the money, but it's just about on the cusp of it. So the point here is, whilst we have had a few rough months, there are some assets that are still doing just about all right. And you don't build a 15-year asset and then start worrying about the month on month. You just can't. There'll be highs and lows. And my word, what an incredible run we had for 2.5-3 years coming up to this. But yeah, even in the tough times, there are some assets that still do pretty well.
So essentially, yeah, if you're located in the southeast of England, you're still getting a pretty good triad rate. And then, yeah, if you were built, say, 2018, 2019, you've got a sort of pretty good old capacity market contract with no derating. But then also, if you've got one of those newer capacity market contracts that, you know, a T1, which was £75 per kilowatt, or the T4, which, well, we've got the T4s coming up, which are like clearly about £60.
But you do get screwed on the derating.
Yeah, but you are getting screwed on the derating now. But in general,
screwed's a bit strong, but I do definitely think it's the right word.
There's a big disparity in the market based on what capacity market contract you've got. And because revenues from elsewhere have fallen so much, that's now having a much bigger impact in sort of separating what is earning probably an okay amount with what's probably earning below what they'd be after. Mm.
And we've done all this. We haven't even talked about the balancing mechanism. Wendell, your favorite topic. Do you want to just riff on what's going on in the balancing mechanism? Because there's a lot happening and there are many reasons to be cheerful.
So in general, you know, the balancing mechanism outside of sort of an increase in wholesale volatility, which we expect to slowly happen, but year on year, who knows what that would actually look like. The balancing mechanism is where we would expect to see revenues grow. The reason for that is sort of the numbers behind the balancing mechanism are kind of pretty bonkers. It's what's driving sort of the entire of the REMA process. It's this obvious view that we are having, well, the control room is having to redispatch. I think they say up to like 50% of generation at times.
Yeah, what do you mean by the numbers are bonkers? Is it the pounds or the megawatt hours or the, what is it? Yeah. What's the bonkers bit?
We did the numbers on this like kind of late last year, and sort of on like an average continuous basis. So this is, it doesn't really happen like this in real life, but there's about 3 gigawatts of sort of continuous sort of up and down actions happening in the balancing mechanism. It's the continuous aspect of that which makes that enormous, like when you look at it on terms of energy volume.
And that's all the plant at the margin, right? Because you've got a load of baseload nukes that don't move really, and you've got a load of renewables that will run if there's wind or solar. So what's fascinating is of a system that often only has 30 gigs of demand, you've got 10% of that is being redispatched. Oh, and then by the way, of that 30 gigs, half of it never moves anyway. So it's an even bigger percentage.
That depends on when it is as well. Like when it's windy, so let's say kind of 2 weeks ago, you could see up to like 6 gigawatts of wind being turned off and then 6 gigawatts of mostly kind of gas plant being turned up.
This is the bad thing, isn't it? Yeah. This is just like it.
So this is, yeah. So this is kind of the issue of constraints. We don't have enough transmission capacity to get all the wind down from Scotland to sort of London.
You can explain it. It all sort of makes sense rationally. But like if you're going to write it, if you're going to tell someone down the pub about it, it's a bad thing.
Yeah. And so if we have that like kind of 3 gigawatt number we had, about half are these kind of system actions. So solving constraints, solving kind of voltage problems. But then the other half is actually just kind of like continuous sort of energy balancing. So that's basically balancing supply and demand it might be a gas plant kind of trips when it's ramping, or sort of wind generation is a bit later to kind of increase than what was forecast. So even just that on its own is still a pretty sort of massive requirement of energy. And the reason this is important for batteries is that, I mean, to date, there's been this problem of this thing called skip rates, essentially batteries just not getting used as much as they could do for a lot of that volume, despite often being one of the lowest priced kind of solutions.
And being skipped in the merit order.
Yeah, so skip there just means essentially something that was more expensive was used instead. So quite frequently, that could be turning up sort of a gas plant, but it's actually a lot of time also like using pumped hydro.
And this is outrageous, right? This is outrageous. I'm going to go hard about it. This is insane, right? There must be a good reason for it.
I think, it's hard. Like within the kind of the way that the control room works, you've got sort of, control room engineers making decisions, making manual dispatch instructions to these assets. This is sort of like a system which like the shape of that hasn't really changed, or I don't know, really for like probably 20 years or so.
But it is easy to throw the control room engineers under the bus. And I don't think we should get one of those on, because I bet there's a lot more to it. Yeah. Well, we know there's a lot more to it, right?
To sort of look at it in context, like if I need a very short term amount of like site, like let's say 500 megawatts, what I could have done before if I was in the control room is go and sort of tell, you know, maybe 10 to 15 different batteries, okay, I need you for this amount. But then each of those, they need to create like an instruction for and send that. Each of those might take 30 seconds to do. Very quickly, you've run out of your minute, 2 minutes that you need to get that action in time for. So instead, they tell De Norwig to deliver it in one big go instead. And that kind of makes sense. Like it's not a
buzzword bingo for blaming De Norwig for blaming the control room, blaming De Norwig.
And I think that's the thing. That makes sense within the kind of constraints of what's been available to those engineers in the control room.
So they've got to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And that's a tough job. And there's loads of stress. And actually, would you rather get that power from one place or 15, 20 different places?
Yeah. And so,
by the way, we also don't want the lights to go out. So it's all very well complaining about this, but what would be even worse is if they did their job badly and the lights went out.
Yeah. And so what has been positive is, I think it was beginning of December, we saw the launch of the Open Balancing Platform. And so this is kind of like the next generation of like computer systems within the control room, which is attempting to kind of solve this problem. It's basically creating better tools, better sort of just like underlying software that can deal with the problem of having to dispatch more and more sort of volume, but also just more and more like actual like units. And so that came with this thing called bulk dispatch, which essentially means that a control room engineer can, so in that example of that, like needing 500 megawatts, they just can draw, they can say, okay, I need 500 megawatts, 15 minutes. They put that into the algorithm and the algorithm will say, okay, here is the least cost option. I can get that for you. And I'm going to send all those instructions to maybe say 20, 30, 40, 50 battery units. And then they get that response. And so that is sort of, I mean, it's pretty fundamental change to how these different technologies can be used in the control room. The other thing we've had is the start of the sort of, recognizing that batteries have been limited in the duration of dispatch they can be used for. So there's been this thing called the 15-minute rule, which essentially just means that the control room could only know that they could, you know, instruct a battery for up to 15 minutes.
Is it actually a rule? Like everyone talks about the 15-minute rule. Is it just a thing that everyone calls it, or is it, has someone written it down somewhere as a rule?
That's a good question. The thing is with it is it actually hasn't been stuck to rigidly. At times we do see longer kind of dispatches happen as a whole. You can sort of treat it that batteries won't get dispatched from that, which is a problem because actually most of sort of energy balancing actions are half an hour long. Mm. And so in March, we saw the change to 30-minute rule. So batteries can now be dispatched up to 30 minutes. It's not quite perfect, but there's kind of more stuff happening this year.
Well, what should be, what's the right number? I don't really like rules in general, but if we're going to have one, should it be a 30-minute rule? Should it be an hour-long rule? Should it be a 20? What's the right number?
I think the right number is there's no rule. The right number is there's no rule. The right number is that the control room sees how much energy each battery has, and some sort of algorithmic dispatch can then work out how long it could dispatch it for.
Mm.
And that is where they're aiming to get to. So at the end of the year, there's kind of a few grid code mods going on, looking very hard at this, like whether it will actually solve that problem. We need to wait and see.
So no rule is what we're aiming for.
No rule. Yeah. I think that's what I think. Yeah. The most optimal place for us to get to is where, like, the fact is there have been a lot of these rules and things which actually on the surface, you don't even realize are there, that have been probably blocking how certain technologies can be used in the balancing mechanism. And we want to get to, and I think if you speak to the people who are running that kind of open balancing platform, it's where they want to get to as well, basically getting rid of those rules and technologies can compete on a level playing field.
So is that it then? So if we go to the no minute rule, or well, we get rid of the 30 minute rule, there is no rule, then is that it? Is this the big thing that's going to unlock loads of volume and price for batteries in the balancing mechanism?
I'm going to say no, because what we're seeing with the open balancing platform, with bulk dispatch, with the change 30-minute rule, the move to no rule, it's just getting rid of some of these technological barriers that were in place. But because of the way the control room works, it's still sort of essentially run manually. There's a lot of actual kind of decisions that are taken on a human level that need to change. But
do you mean skip rate?
Essentially in that scenario of the engineer deciding to dispatch to Norwig rather than sort of 20, 30 individual battery units.
I think what they should do is give these guys bonuses based on maybe the carbon cost of the actions they're taking. That would be the best one, yeah. I think. Or if they want to get more batteries used, then that should be part of the bonus plan or something. I don't know. You could end up with weird incentives and fear that the lights would go out. But I don't get it. If we get rid of this 30-minute rule and we've got bulk dispatch, what reason is there to skip a battery?
Well, that's the thing. I think you're getting rid of those kind of,
apart from system actions, I get that.
Technical reasons as to why you would previously not skip. And then I think, then you'd hope that there's enough kind of pressure from an economic perspective or carbon perspective to basically, to just make sure that you are expanding how you use this technology. I think, yeah, it's kind of, you see everywhere. It's just kind of like there's general, like, you know, resistance to change. There's like an inertia to sort of change happening.
All very well. But if you're running more expensive plant instead of cheaper plant, and more carbon intensive plant instead of cheaper plant, and all the reasons that you have to do that have gone away, then there's a, let's see where we get to.
So for me, I think the big thing is that...
So I've got a bee in my bonnet about this.
For me, I think the big thing is that we are going to see this year the sort of amount of batteries available in the balancing mechanism just go up and up and up and up. The more, every sort of megawatt more we get of capacity now, it's not going into frequency response, it's just going into the balancing mechanism. And it's going to get to a point where, you know, the control room will have to basically adapt and really shift sort of their behaviors to use battery storage.
We should do the petition to change the name from balancing mechanism to the battery mechanism, because it's going to happen. And if we just get it out of the way now, then we can make a point.
Yeah. If you look at all that energy balancing stuff, there's no reason why you couldn't just do that with batteries.
The battery mechanism.
Yeah.
That's all it is. That's all it is. We've talked about most different markets now. I think we've covered everything. But we are in a period of lower revenues. It's pretty rough out there the last few months. But some assets are doing better than others. And location really matters. And we're excited about what's happening in the BM. Is there anything else we need to talk about, particularly about the future?
I think if we look at this year, I think yeah, we've had this sort of slightly contradictory period where, in theory, the winter should be the most valuable period for batteries. But actually, potentially this year, it's going to be the least valuable. Because as we kind of go into spring, summer, we see actually increasing spreads because of negative pricing.
This is your favorite topic of all, isn't it?
Yeah, I love negative pricing. And yeah, I mean, in the context of lower demand, more renewables, you know, last year we had a record amount of negative pricing.
Was that 4% or something, wasn't it, last time?
Yeah, I think it was like 78 hours of like zero or negative pricing last year.
That's the whole year.
That's the whole year. Hours. And so what that does for batteries is it creates spreads in the times when demand is sort of low as well as high. And I think that's the one kind of positive aspect for batteries is that, you know, even in a sort of lower demand, sort of high renewable generation sort of world we're maybe in right now, there's still some value for them there. Whereas, you know, if I'm sitting on a gas peaker, I can't run all summer. So that's my short-term view. I think, yeah, we'll actually see the index probably increase into the summer.
Because you've got the spreads, they just move further down. They're around the zero mark, not around the £100 mark or whatever.
Yeah. And then beyond that, I think, yeah, it's just a case of watching what happens in the balance mechanism, the battery mechanism.
The battery mechanism. Thank you. I want a dollar for every time someone uses that now. Well, that was fun, Wendell. We're going to do this again in probably 6 months' time after the summer period and see whether we were right about your negative pricing and see what else is happening, particularly in the gas market. But for now, we'll leave it there.